Hello, hello, hello. Today I would like to talk a little bit about free software games, open source games, all of that good stuff. It's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, and I think that it represents an interesting culture within free software and an interesting culture within gaming. It's where the two worlds collide, and I think that there's some interesting stuff to be said there. I think many of us will look at free software games in a slightly different way than how we look at free software tools or, free software drivers and anything like that, right? Many of us will consider games to be maybe a luxury or something that sits on top of what would otherwise be a free and open source system. And I suppose in many ways, it's not even as clear cut. There will be a lot of games that could be open sourced, but they'll have proprietary components in terms of artwork or music or the engine. And there'll be games that are proprietary, but every single component of them individually, like, the engine, what was used to develop the audio and the graphics and all that, that could be done with open source tools. And when we talk about, for example, games coming to Linux now, I don't think it really matters whether or not those games are fundamentally native. I don't think that's a relevant sort of point of discussion, I guess, because if it works on Linux, it works on Linux. If it runs well through Wine, it runs well through Wine. Wine, of course, is an open source compatibility layer too. I would rather have an open source game that is built for Windows and runs on Wine than a proprietary game that was released for Linux in that regard. But I guess the two, I've often resisted comparing the two, because what I enjoy about free and open source games is not what I enjoy about proprietary games. To me, they are two different things completely, right? Because a game, when you buy it from a shop, when you buy it from Steam, is a product, right? You pay for it, you give money for it, it's a product. Sometimes it can be a service, like World of Warcraft or a big MMORPG or something on Stadia, for example. You put money down, and what you're fundamentally getting is a service, which I would liken to something like a trip to the cinema or the theater, where you spend some money for an experience rather than a product. But if you're buying a game to install and play on your hard disk, you can liken that to a product. It's not necessarily the same thing, because when you download a game through Steam, for example, it's still laden within the proprietary Steam system, and if Steam were to disappear tomorrow, so would your games and all that kind of stuff. So the question of even ownership is rather questionable at that. And of course, when you buy a game, you do sort of buy the license to play the game as part of all of that. And, do you really own something if you're not allowed to use it as you wish? I mean, using software as you wish is one of the tenets of the essential software freedoms. So, but to me, the thing that makes free software, like free software games and open source games, they come in many different stripes. I've been playing a game called Koi Farm. Koi Farm is a charming little game. It's available on Steam and I believe the Itch Store as well. The Itch Store is open source, or at least the client is open source, rather. Not that you need a client. You can just go to the website and just download the games that you get from Itch there anyway. And Itch now works with Wine as well, so you can buy and play games built for Windows on Itch as seamlessly as others. And often, actually, on Itch, as a side note, you will often find that developers who don't natively develop for Linux, or when I say natively develop for Linux, those that don't use Linux and are not necessarily familiar with Linux, will often support their Windows version and update their Windows version with more frequency than Linux. And you can often get just a better user experience by playing a game, even on Itch, through Wine than by using the native Linux port. With Windows, I'll often find the bugs get fixed faster and all that kind of stuff. So, for the sake of indie developers and their limited resources, in many cases, unless they have a particular attachment to Linux, I'm I would almost encourage them just to focus on Windows and the platform that works, really. But going back to my original point, the thing that I like about free software games that you don't get with proprietary games, and like I say, there are different stripes. I've been playing Koi Farm. Koi Farm's a lovely game. It was originally released as proprietary, and then they have since opened up the source code. It's under the Apache license with a clause to say that you can't sell it. Which is fair. I know that that is not by the letter of the law open source, but I think that that's as much of the way there. I mean, that's Creative Commons non-commercial, fundamentally speaking, right? Which is fine, really, at its heart. I know it's not necessarily, should we say, FSF blessed, as I like to say, but it's good enough. It's certainly better than just Square Proprietary. It's not a bad game. It's very relaxing. It's very cool. It's not very expensive. So, and I've put... I don't know, I put about 4 hours into it, and I've got stuck, but I do kind of want to come back to it, because it's a very relaxing game. If you're one of those people like myself who spend a fair amount of time in Discord group chats, and you're just chatting away with your mates on the mic, and you want something to do just in the background, then this is a nice little game. What's also really cool about it is that it's got a trading card functionality to it. So when you farm particular breeds of carp, I think it's breeds of carp. I don't know carp very well, but like when you get certain types of carp, you can then share them with other people. And the objective is to fill a book of various different carp of different colours and stripes and all that kind of stuff. And it's quite charming. And you can, you know, if you get a, you know, if you get a red one and your friend gets a pink one, you can sort of trade them with trading cards, and that helps. And so it's fundamentally a communal game, which I kind of like about that. And so by extension makes sense that it's open source. And also, I was looking at the Steam page just before coming on today, and even though they open sourced it very recently, really, I'll try and find the news article right here. There have already been a number of community-contributed improvements. A couple of them are bug fixes. Many of them are translations. You've got Spanish, Portuguese, simplified Chinese, Russian, Frisian, Ukrainian translations. And, like, that's wonderful. Like, it's great that... The community have actually, you know, responded really well and started getting involved, and I couldn't be happier for it. But of course, this is just one stripe of open source games, because it's sort of, you get, you'll sometimes find the games then get developed under a proprietary license and then open source, and that's great. But it still resembles, at least in its initial stages, the product that it was intended to be. Now, it seems that the developers have embraced the community aspect of... I mean, the source code was released on the 30th of March, and these contributions were in by the 2nd of April, just to, you know. But these, the developers in question seem to have definitely embraced the community strengths of free software and open source software, which is great. Another product, but, you know, like a product-like game that is also open source and free software, is Shapes. You can trial it out at Shapes, shapez.io. It's available on Itch and Steam. Super addictive game. One of my favorite open source games. That was also developed, I believe, by a single developer, with help with things like music and such. Think Factorio crossed with Mini Metro. And I love one of those type of games where you have a mechanic, but the context is kind of removed, and you're just like faced with the actual game mechanics with no context, and you get Shapes. That is Shapes, and it's a beautiful game. The soundtrack is, I bought the soundtrack on Bandcamp as well. So you'll often find with free software and open source games that whilst they may not be big AAA titles, and they may not have the audience, the size that you get with AAA titles, the audience that you do get tend to be pretty supportive. And I've also found that the communities are very supportive and very kind as well. We're all familiar with the tropes of the big AAA, you know, entitled gamer stereotypes and all that kind of thing. But, you know, at the other end of the spectrum with open source games, because there is this sense of community about them, and because they foster this sense of community, I've always found, and I'm sure there are exceptions, but I always found the communities to be very kind and pleasant to be a part of, and that is great. But there's also another type of open source game on that are built basically by their community, that have been around for a nice long, you know, time, and that they were open source from the ground up, and they were built communally from the ground up. And we're talking about your Super Tux carts, we're talking about your mine tests, we're talking about your Battle for Wesnoth and your Widelands. There's like Open Arena, Open TTD, and all of these games were, I think I would even put OpenMW and many others in that regard, where they have just a team of people that are passionate about developing the game in the open source way. Now, that's not to say that every part of the team cares about free software politics the same way that many of you folks will, but that's the thing. Like, even though we as free software people and a community can be very pedantic about various different licenses, various different terminology, and all this kind of stuff, I think fundamentally when the spirit of open source and free software work, it works in an unspoken way. It brings in people and they just build stuff with it, right? Once you've laid out the framework there, and don't take it too seriously, especially in the gaming world where games are supposed to be fun, and that includes the developing and building of games and the communities around games. It's all supposed to be fun. You're going to bring in people who are not necessarily free software enthusiasts, but people who just want to be a part of something creative and constructive and enjoyable. And by extension, that becomes very meaningful. And that's what I think free software gaming, to me, is about, and where its strength lies. You're never going to get, you're never going to build a big AAA title with free software, right? You're never going to get your, one of my favorite franchises is Hitman. Very complex game to make. Would be very difficult with so many resources would require it that I don't believe free software would be able to keep up. It may very, very well be able to make a game that appeals to the same kind of, puzzles that Hitman has. And there is a game called Clone Point, which is a clone of Gunpoint, which is very similar to the Hitman games in terms of objectives and level design, but it's 2D. I love Gunpoint, and I quite like Clone Point. I think that's what it's called. And it's unfortunate that Clone Point kind of ended up getting a bit abandoned, because with a little bit more development, I would love to have seen that grow into something quite wonderful, really. In a pound-for-pound fight, free software is not going to beat AAA. And that's not just in games, but that's going to be in a lot of specialist software as well. And I think that games sort of demonstrate this in a very obvious way. The benefit of free software games are to people whose values line up with the free software world and what free software does. It could arguably be a good way to bring people into the free software world. One of the things I have deep concerns about is bringing new people in and making new people passionate about free software to replace those who are retiring and moving on, and to make sure that the knowledge base and the user base and the participants of the free software world grow. And at the very least, not to shrink. We've done some amazing stuff as a community, and I would want to see that go from strength to strength. And as part of any wide culture, including free software culture, there needs to be fun stuff. There needs to be actual culture and art and expression and enjoyment and recreation. With games that appeal to those passions that we have, I think that it can offer what we enjoy about free software in a different light. That's not to say that we should maybe never play proprietary games, but I certainly always think to myself that playing and promoting and enjoying free software games is always something I should do more. I love building stuff in Mindtest. I was playing with my friend Steve a round of Battle for Wesnoth. That game is amazing. And if you look on my gaming channel on YouTube or NVIDIA's, if you want, you can find the links to that on chrisware.uk. Yeah, I played a couple of games with Battle for Wesnoth with Olivia and Hamish as well. And that's one of my favorite games outright. Like, I absolutely love Battle for Wesnoth. And it doesn't need to be a AAA. It doesn't, you know, it is just meaningful culture that represents our society, our community, and our values. And I absolutely love that in a fun way. The music, the art of Battle for Wesnoth it's all beautiful. It's great. And it's not something that has been bestowed upon us by a multinational corporation that will never know our names. It was made by the community it seeks to entertain. And there's something to me very magical about that, very meaningful about that. And that to me is where free software games, you know, they have their value. Their value is not going to be the same kind of value that you get from your AAAs. And you know, we will never win in a direct competition to people who don't understand what it is that we care about. But for many people who are looking for something away from AAA, that might be a way to bring them in. Like, they might enjoy a lot of the free software games. They might enjoy a lot of open source games, who might also enjoy indie games. And then that might be a way to bring people in. Or just, it might not. You know, it's still something that we can enjoy. It's still something that represents us in a way that is more approachable to those outside of our community as well. It's a good way to communicate in terms of, you know, being culturally open. When I talk about a lot of like free and open source stuff in the very, you know, sort of the technical, a lot of people just switch off. But to show someone a game and to show that that was made by a community of people who mean a lot to me, that is something that connects with a lot more people. So in a lot of subtle ways, I think free software and open source gaming matter. And I think that they're more important than they're often given credit for. And I think that they're often looked down upon when people compare them to proprietary equivalents that have had countless amounts of money put behind them. And developing games is expensive. Even the indie games, it takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of work. And I think to develop what we have, even though we don't have as many games, the games that we have are definitely like, certainly when it comes to, like, you know, you look at the best of open source games, you know, yes, years upon years upon years have been put into them, and the quality of that shows. And that's remarkable. And it's not going to be laden with DRM, and it's not going to have microtransactions. And I think that's wonderful. I think that's something that we can that are worth holding on to. If you want to look for a good list of free and open source games that I play, there is a link to them on my World Wide Web site, chrisware.uk. If you go into the links and interesting things section, there'll be a section there for games. I think if you go to chrisware.uk/links.html and then just go down to games, you'll find a list of open source games that I enjoy playing. And some of them look good. Like, some of them are, you know, they're not, when I say that they're not necessarily competing with AAA, the graphics for many of them are still good. You know, Battle for Wesnoth is a pixel art game, but that pixel art is really good pixel art. As Xenotic, it is an arena shooter. Not necessarily the most complex game in terms of mechanics, but it's a good looking game. Red Eclipse, another arena shooter that is open source. You can pick it up as an app image, I believe, and I think it might be available on Steam. You know, that's a good looking game as well. There's a lot to enjoy there in the open source gaming world. And in many ways, and I do mean to do a video on this at some point in the future, I think there is an argument to be made, and I'd love to hear your feedback on this one. I've been getting great feedback so far through email and on Mastodon. And this is one that I would like to definitely see who agrees and who disagrees with me. There is a part of my mind, a sizable part of my mind, that thinks that Steam coming to Linux might not have been the best thing for Linux. I'm not necessarily whole, you know, like that's a pretty big statement, and I don't know how definitive I want to make it. But I remember before Steam came to Linux, and I remember that we had a smaller selection of games that the entire community came round and enjoyed and played together and supported. And there used to be tournaments for OpenRA and OpenTTD and all this kind of stuff. And now it seems that Linux is resembling Windows a lot more in how fractured the gaming is. And I don't even hear the arguments, well, you can't game on Linux anymore. I just don't hear that anymore. And it's true, right? If you cannot find, like, okay, not every game that you can play on Windows can be played on Linux, but probably most of them can be. And there's also a good number for those that can't. You can play them on stream. You can play them on GeForce Now. There's a lot of ways to play Windows games on Linux. It's not even just Steam at this point. GeForce Now is pretty wonderful. If you can't find a game from the tens of thousands available to you, that's definitely a you problem, right? Like, we are spoiled for choice, and I think we've got too much choice. And I'm not necessarily saying we should banish Steam from the realms of Linux. Like, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. But it felt like when we had a smaller number of games, there were more people enjoying each of those games. And it felt like we had quality and community around those games. And now we've got so many games, the Linux gaming user base has scattered and is so sparse and is so indistinct as well. Like, the difference between, these days, I don't know if I'm playing with someone on Windows or Linux or Mac. Sometimes Mac. I mean, Mac people can't really play any games at all. I mean, Linux can certainly play infinitely more games than Mac could. You know, it's amazing to think that we've massively leapfrogged Mac as a gaming platform. And, you know, I never really expected that to ever happen. And now it's just, wow, you know, it was almost overnight. And, but yeah, like the people in terms of gaming communities that I'm a part of, it doesn't matter if you play on Windows, it doesn't matter if you play on Linux, it doesn't matter if you play on GeForce Now, it doesn't, you know, like it's, and other, you know, streaming services, you know, it's all fine. Like, but also, like, I feel that this is just a facet where Linux has kind of lost its edge. It's lost a very small part of what made it. What, you know, it lost a little part of its identity. Super Tuxcart, whilst I believe available for Windows and Android and stuff, it still, at heart, was a Linux-first game. And I feel just nowadays, like, it's, you know, that doesn't necessarily, like, it that's disappeared. Now, of course, with open source games, yes, you get installers for Windows. They're available for Windows. I'm sure many of the developers that contribute to open source games use Windows and have done, you know, years upon years upon years ago. And I think that's a great way. You know, I think using open source on Windows is great, right? Like, I think, in fact, if you have Windows and almost every tool you use on top of Windows is open source, it's probably better than if you had Linux, but you were only ever just, you know, piling on proprietary software. You know, like, the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter what platform you're running your open source software and your free software on, more free software in more people's hands is good. And having it cross-platform and compatible and using open standardized formats is great, and it's the march of progress. I like that. So I think, to be, you know, there is something to be said that, like, Steam have just brought, and even in the early days of Steam, I remember when a new game came out, it got me playing games at, you know, that I wouldn't otherwise have picked up, because it was just such an interesting event when a new game was released for Linux. It was just fun, and other people did the same. And then me and some Linuxy people would just play some games together that we'd never really considered playing simply because it was just available on Linux. Now, it's just like, you know, the distinction between operating systems is is kind of, you know, is redundant in many ways when it comes to gaming. And I'm sure many people say, yeah, you know, like off the face of it, that sounds like a great thing. And it probably is. But there is a part of me, maybe a nostalgic part of me, that thinks that when the majority of games that we were playing were free software and open source, that it felt much more like a community. Now it just feels like we're consumers. And I guess that's a transition that I feel I've noticed. And I'd be interested to hear if you folks have seen or noticed anything similar. I guess what I'm kind of saying in the most basic sense of the term is gaming on Linux is just not as magical as it used to be, because it's not even gaming on Linux anymore. It's just gaming, you know? And, you know, when it was ours and when we were creating it, I guess it felt different. And none of that's gone away, but the proprietary stuff seems to have diluted it, I guess. So anyway, that's just a few thoughts of mine. Crikey, these audio clips, they do go on for a while, don't they? I just rattle on and share my thoughts, and you folks seem to be enjoying them. I get lots of great feedback, and please do share your thoughts with me on the Fediverse and through email. I've been getting a lot of comments through email in the Fediverse, and I must admit, it's a nice way to experience comments. I don't really read YouTube comments anymore. I'll put up a video, and like for the next couple of hours, I'll check in on the comments for the newest video, and maybe once when I feel like I should be responsible for moderating my comments, I'll just go to the comments tab of my YouTube channel and just see if there's anything particularly grotesque or unacceptable that's been left. But at the end of the day, I think that the YouTube comment section kind of makes it just too easy to just dump your thoughts down and without really giving them thought. And I think when people are, you know, confronted with going to the Fediverse and typing out something or composing something in email, it just gives that extra moment of thought, I guess. Or it could very well be that the kind of people who use the Fediverse and the kind of people that engage with email in the way that they do, in the way, you know, are just, you know, of the more thoughtful type. So, just a thought there. But thank you folks very much for joining me. It's a pleasure as always. And until next time, I've been Chris Ware, and you've been awesome. Toodaloo.